In a somewhat depressing revelation, 18th century British economist and demographer Thomas Malthus argued that population would always increase faster than food supply. However, research and development in agriculture has enabled an explosion in productivity in the last century, allowing urbanisation to accelerate as food production became less labour-intensive. The ability to provide food surpluses has effectively driven the advances of the modern world. But are we proving Malthus wrong? I asked Dr. Jenny Gordon of the Australian International Agricultural Research Centre whether Malthusian theory still stands today.
Well, it certainly stood for you know, much of human history. And when we had good years, the populations grew. And when the years were lean, the population shrank again. And then we had the Green Revolution. And, you know, this is really agricultural productivity. You just had this capacity to grow production, food production, geometrically and not arithmetically, which was Malthus's key contention that that people bred like rabbits do. You know, one pair leads to a number who would then in turn breed, whereas food would go up sort of one by one by one type of thing.
And this sort of went along with the increase in, I guess, speed of technology and civilization and all these sorts of things, because people had the time to do things other than just survive and get enough food to get by.
Absolutely. And so, you know, people have always, in, you know, when there was enough food, they put their efforts into culture and song and dance. And in the Middle Ages, they built cathedrals and things like that. But what we've seen after the Industrial Revolution is much more general flourishing. And so particularly over the last 100 years or so, we've seen vast numbers of people move out of absolute poverty because our agricultural systems are so productive that we don't need very many people working in agriculture anymore. So those people are released to work in other industries, produce a lot more material goods that we have, but also produce a lot more services. And we kind of forget that now 80% of the Australian population is employed in the delivery of services. And so, you know, there's not that many people needed to grow the things we need to eat or to make the things that make our, you know, build our buildings and those kinds of things that make our lives good to live.
I mean, there's things in terms of harvesting and so forth. It's all GPS and these magnificent computerized harvesters that can, you can just program them and they could really do it by themselves. You don't actually have to be in there driving it anymore. I mean, that's the sort of level you get to, isn't it?
Well, it is in some areas, right? But so it's quite interesting. So agricultural research had focused for a long time on driving that improvements in efficiency. So, you know, producing the most yield with the least amount of inputs. So, you know, some of that precision agriculture is amazing because it says this is a productive bit of ground, put more seed here. This bit of ground is not that productive, we don't seed it. So you don't waste input. But increasingly there's a lot more that is about how do we integrate agricultural production in a way that is more biodiversity friendly, in a way that is more, you know, resilient to pests and diseases that are, you know, which monocultures aren't. I think we're seeing in agricultural R&D that is really starting to grapple less with the how do we maximize efficiency in producing, you know, a kilo of beef or you know, a kilo of grain, but also thinking about how do we do that at the same time as we provide, you know, protection for endangered species, that we maintain soil carbon and the sorts of all the microbes that live in our soil. And then certainly in developing countries, how do we improve their productivity while not losing the resilience you get from a real diversity of crops and products?
Whilst we've been developing better and better technology to improve food production, much of it does require significant investment. So how can poorer countries benefit from technological advancement? Can we come up with more low-cost solutions?
That's always going on. You know, it's always looking at the – it's not necessarily low tech. It's actually, and this is what I was alluding to earlier when I was talking about trying to find, you know, it's not always about our great precision agriculture machines that are driven by GPS and, you know, we've got all this data and know exactly what's going on at many Australian farms. But there's an awful lot of good systems management, particularly irrigation systems management, good crop management, reducing pollutant runoff, so getting the nutrient amounts right, so assisting them in these countries. And then finding varieties that are more resilient to disease is a really big issue area where big payoffs for producers. And then the other ones are sort of things like you've probably heard of golden rice, which was a rice variety developed, I think, in the 50s or 60s that just had much higher levels of certain vitamins that the populations in Asia were quite deficient in. And so this rice actually improved nutrition. So there's work at many different angles that has been done over the decades, but also continues to be done. So it's not just about sort of low-tech ways of doing things. It's actually high-tech ways of doing things that are affordable and that benefit many.
Former DFAT economist Dr. Jenny Gordon, member of the Australian International Agricultural Research Centre's Monitoring, Evaluation and Learning Advisory Panel and of the Asian Development Bank Institute's Advisory Committee, and speaking with me there.